I wonder how many of you know how to get home from where you're sitting right now. Know how to get home. If you had to walk home, that you know the exact way to go. Okay, if you live in Aliso Viejo, this might be a little bit easier. But some of you live in RSM, in Mission Viejo, in San Clemente, in Dana Point. Some of you live far away, but I want to know if you can get home. Okay, let's just say that for some weird reason, you have to drive a car this afternoon and you have to get home. Do you know how to get home? Yes. Most of you say yes. Some of you say, well, with Siri's help, I could figure out how to get there with Google Maps. No, I'm talking about just your brain and the car. Could you do it? Okay. Most of you probably can, and that's a good thing. I'd hope that at some point you'd learn how to get home, maybe before you're 30, 40 years old. Hopefully you'd be able to learn how to get home. You think that's a good idea? What if I told you that there was people who were 30 or 40 years old that didn't know how to get home from church? You'd think, wow, they need to like learn the directions and the left and rights and the straights and which way to go. They should probably learn that because it's too late for them. For you guys, it's not too late. And let me encourage you. If you don't know how to get home, it's not too late for you to learn because you've probably never driven a car, at least not legally. Of course. But one day, you're going to need to know exactly how to get home, and you're not going to want to be confused about it. What James is going to talk about today might seem like it's a far-off thing. It might seem like, well, I don't need to worry about that right now. That's kind of what older people have to worry about. That's kind of what adults have to worry about. Well, I want to tell you that if you get this right today, and you understand what we're going to talk about today from the book of James, you are going to be set up for success in this area for the rest of your life. So I want us to learn about this. In James chapter 5, open it up. He's going to talk about money. He's going to talk about stuff. He's going to talk about riches. Check it out. James chapter 5, remember it was like 16 million years ago when we were last in the book of James, or it was like 2 weeks ago. But we were in the book of James and we looked at that passage that said your life is like a vapor. It's like a mist that's here today, it's gone tomorrow, and you're not in control of it. Remember that? When he said, hey, don't make prideful plans without God's will in mind. That's the last thing he just talked about. And now, in verse number 1 of chapter 5, he continues this idea. All right, now think about how this connects. Check it out. It says, come now, you rich. And you might be like, well, bummer, that's not me. I'm not rich. Well, good thing. Look what it says. Weep and howl for the miseries that are coming upon you. Weep and howl, okay? Those two words are supposed to remind the reader of the Old Testament prophets when they said, hey, guess what? Judgment's coming, and it's going to be so bad that what you should do right now is you should start crying and you should start screaming. Like, weep and howl, that's what it means, crying and screaming. That doesn't seem to make much sense, right? That James says, hey, rich people, you guys should start screaming and crying. Like, what? What? Of all people to scream and cry, why a rich person? Look at what it says. For the miseries that are coming upon you. It says, your riches have rotted, and your garments are moth-eaten. Your gold and silver have corroded, and their corrosion will be evidence against you, and they will eat your flesh like fire. Okay, I guess that's why we're weeping and howling here, because he says something's going to eat up your flesh like fire. Your flesh is your skin, right? Your body. It's like there's going to be something, your riches in the end will eat you up. What is he talking about? Let's keep reading. He says, you have laid up treasure in the last days. Behold, the wages of the laborers who mowed your fields. That's really important. You have to figure out whenever you open up a text in the Bible, who is this being written to, right? That's a very important question. Who is this for, okay? I think indirectly, this can be for us, but directly, this is not for us. Does that make sense? He's not directly saying this is for a junior high student because, get this, this is for a, first of all, a rich person, and also it's for a person who has laborers in their field, okay? Does anyone have laborers in their field, okay? Not your little brother, not your little sister, that's not what I'm talking about, right? A person who works in your field, okay? That's who James is talking to. That's super important. Keep reading. It says, the wages of the laborers who mowed your fields, which you have kept back by fraud, are crying out against you. It's this poetic way of saying, look, you've cheated people out of money. And guess what? That is evidence against you. And where is that money? It's in your bank accounts. It's evidence against you. You have it. You still have hoarded that wealth. And then it says, they're crying out against you, and the cries of the harvesters, not just the money is crying out, the presence of the money in your so-called bank accounts for the rich people, it's also the people who've been cheated. They're crying to God. It says they've reached the ears of the Lord of hosts. You ever wonder what that phrase means, the Lord of hosts? It's kind of a strange phrase. It's used in the Bible a lot. Here's what it means. The Lord who is in charge of armies says, he hears. He knows that you've frauded people out of money. He knows that you've cheated people out of their wages. That's serious, right? That's his point. Look at verse 5, talking about the rich people again. He says, you've lived on earth in luxury and self-indulgence. You've fattened your hearts in a day of slaughter, right? You know when cows like eat all a lot of grass and they get super fat so that they can be In-N-Out hamburgers, right? It's kind of like a humane, like, I just like, you know, what does that mean? Well, you can figure that out, right? Just like dead, right? And they become your hamburgers, and it's a good thing. Unless you're a vegetarian, then I guess you don't think it's such a good thing. But I like In-N-Out and other kinds of beef, steak. What, I don't even know what else. There's hamburger and there's steak. I don't know what else comes from a cow. Milk. Well, that doesn't involve killing them. But what's the point? He's saying this. You guys, who he's talking about rich people, you guys have filled your hearts in such a way that you're like a cow that has been just eating. This is so good. This grass is so good. Dead. Right? He's like, okay, the fact that you've been eating, you've enjoyed that, but guess what? That's only made you more ready to be killed. What he's saying about these rich people is, you guys have gotten more and more stuff, and that's only gotten you more and more judgment in the end. That's why he says, weep and howl. Look at verse 6. This is really bad what they did. He says, you have condemned and murdered the righteous person, and he does not resist you. That's the end of the text that we're going to look at today, but I want you to get this. You might say, well, I'm not that person. I'm not a rich person. I don't have like a field with servants who are like, I have to pay and then I don't pay them. I don't have that. I'm not a boss. I don't have employees. Okay. Here's the thing. One day you will. One day you are going to be in this situation. And how you set up your mindset right now and the goals that you make are so important, because what generally do people want when they go to work? Why do people go to work? They go to work for money, right? And when people talk about, hey, I want to be this job. I want to be this job. What's usually the thing that they say drives that decision? Money, right? I want to get a job where I can make as much money as possible. Can I tell you something? That's the wrong mindset. The Bible says that is the wrong mindset about money. And if you can get that in your brain right now, that's going to change the way you live your entire life. We can even write that down for point number one. Change your mind about money. Change your mind about money. He says, come now, you rich, weep and howl for the miseries that are coming upon you, okay? Seems like you shouldn't want to be this person, okay? And before we get any further, it's really important for us to understand this. The Bible does not say that having money is sinful, okay? It doesn't say that having money is sinful. It doesn't even say being rich is sinful, okay? He's talking about a certain kind of rich person here, okay? What has this rich person done? First of all, they've hoarded all this stuff. They haven't been generous. They've also kept back money from people that they owed it to. They've cheated people. And then verse 6, remember that? It says they've oppressed people and they've even murdered people. Why? For money. If your goal going into your career, your life, your high school, your college is, I want to have a job where I make the most money and it doesn't really matter how I get it, that's what I'm going to do, you will end up like this person. That's why I want to warn you today. Change your mind about it. Most people say, I want to be rich so that I don't have to work anymore, right? That's kind of the goal. I want to be a billionaire by 30 so I can retire and I can live in the Bahamas and I can live here and I can live there and I can go wherever I want in life and do whatever I want. Look at verse 5. He says, one of the things that's bad about these rich people is they've lived in luxury and in self-indulgence. Self-indulgence. That's, you know, two words in English. That means you indulge yourself. You give yourself whatever you want. You could also translate it this way. You have followed your heart. That's what that means. Self-indulgence. You've done whatever your heart has desired. He calls these people out for that, right? But some of us say, that's what I want to do when I grow up. I want to just go out and get as much money as I can so I can spend it whatever way I want. This is why this text is so important for you. Jesus said something about rich people who didn't have an inheritance in the kingdom of God. He says, woe to you who are rich in Luke 6:24, for you have received your consolation. He says, you guys are in trouble because guess what? You're rich and guess what? That's as rich as you'll ever be. Once those are gone, that's it. For people who aren't right with God and all they focus on is money, guess what? That is so not worth it in the end. That's a bad investment. some things you need to realize about money. First of all, first way to change your mind about money is realizing whose it is in the first place. Okay? When you think about the money in your wallet, you think about the clothes that you have, you think about the stuff that's up on your walls or the device you have in your pocket, whose is it? Whose is it? Seriously, think about it. Your stuff. Think it through a list of what do I have? Right? Whose is it? Okay. James 1:17 says, every good and perfect gift is from the Father. Everything you have, even your talents and your looks and anything that you think you possess and nobody else can touch, guess what? It's God's. It's not yours. Okay. Doesn't that change the way you view money? If you say, okay, this money is not even my money, it's God's money that he's given to me to use for him, guess what? I guess it doesn't make sense for me to hoard it up and spend it on my own things. I need to spend it on what God wants me to spend it because it's his money in the first place. But most junior hires don't think that way. And if you think that way, you'll be unique. You'll be different. You won't be like the rest of the world because they say, no, my stuff is my stuff and you can't touch it. The Bible says, no, that's so backwards and so opposite. Your stuff is God's and he can do whatever he wants with it. And good Christians who submit to God say, I will do whatever God wants me to with the stuff that I have. It's so important for you to get right now. One of the reasons it's so important is because Jesus said in Luke 16:13, Jesus says, no servant can serve two masters. For either he'll hate one and love the other, or he will be devoted to one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and money. You cannot serve God and money. And some of you think, well, I'd have to be rich to serve money. That is not the case. Some of the most greedy people in this world are people who don't have much. If that's all you focus on and that's all you care about and that's all you find your identity in and that's what you're so consumed with, then you don't serve God, you serve money. Think about that. There are people in this room who could go to hell one day because you never stopped loving money. Do you realize how big of a deal that is in your own heart? That's huge. And that's why if you get it right now, and if you understand even this morning, I just can't love money like that. No, money cannot be the number one place in my heart. God has to be. If you can understand that today, it can change your entire life. You cannot serve God in money. You could also replace money with anything, with your stuff, with your popularity. That phrase works the same way. No servant can serve two masters. You cannot serve God and your popularity. You cannot serve God and your pleasures. You can't serve both because one of them is going to win. The famous verse, maybe you've heard before, 1 Timothy 6:10, Paul, guy who had some money, lost some money, spent some money, he said, for the love of money is a root of all kinds of evil. Okay? Some people misinterpret that and say money is the root of all kinds of evil. It doesn't say that. It says a love of money is the root of all kinds of evil. If you love it, think about it. It's like a root. And it gives us a little illustration, right? Think about it. You've got a root. What comes out of a root, right? A plant, right? And whatever the root says it is what it's going to be, right? It's the source is what it's saying. If you love money, okay, you will start doing all sorts of sin, all different kinds of sin that you could have just avoided if you didn't love money most. Think about it. When people love money, what do? They lie. They cut corners. They cheat to get as much as they can. They hurt other people for it. They make up gossip and slander other people so they can get the promotion, so they could get the job, so that they can get more money. They lie on their time sheets when they get older, when they work at McDonald's or whatever. You know, they lie on, you know, how long they've worked. They hurt other people. James 4:2, remember that? It says you want and you can't have, so you murder, right? Why do you think people murder each other? Big reason is because of money. Why do people start wars? A lot of times it's because of money. I mean, think about it. What? Divorce, okay? Why do a lot of people get divorced? The biggest thing for divorce is because of money, money problems and stuff. And you have this and I have that. That's one of the leading causes of divorce. It's not the only cause, but it's one of them. It's one of the big ones. The love of money is a root of all kinds of evil. The next half of this verse, super important. Listen to it. It says, it is through this craving that some have wandered away from the faith and they've pierced themselves with many pangs. He says it's because of a love of money and stuff that people have gone to church for a while, sat in youth groups, sat in the chairs, gone to TNNs, gone to revival, and then they walk out the doors and they never come back. Why? Because they love money. That's why when you look at this text and say, well, I'm not a rich person. I'm not this person who owns a field, who oppresses, you know, my servants. Right? That's not me. Then this must not be important. Well, it is, because people wander away from the truth because they love money so much. It says they pierce themselves with many pangs. You might say, well, Paul doesn't really know that though, right? Because he wasn't rich. I mean, what about a rich person? Let's talk to a rich Christian. Let's see what they have to say. Well, Solomon, the richest person in the world at his time, he was the Bill Gates, Jeff Bezos, Mark Zuckerberg. He was that of his time. Here's what he said in Proverbs 13:25. He says, the righteous has enough to satisfy his own appetite. Okay? A righteous person, they've got enough. They're content. That's the Bible word. They're content with what they have. But the belly of the wicked suffers want. If you don't think that's convincing enough, I want you to turn to what he said in Ecclesiastes chapter 5. I want us all to turn in our Bibles to Ecclesiastes chapter 5 and see what Solomon says about money. It says about the love of money. This is back in the Old Testament, right after Psalms, right after Proverbs, and then the book of Ecclesiastes. Solomon had an interesting story because he's a guy who grew up in church, so to speak. He grew up knowing God. He grew up doing the right thing, and then when he got older, he kept wanting to do the right thing. And then when he started to get stuff, it says his stuff and his wives and the things he had and his power turned his heart away from God. Book of Ecclesiastes is written by Solomon, and based on what's written in here, it sounds like it comes at the end of his life. So it seems like Solomon had a happy ending, but the book of Ecclesiastes is the saddest book in all the Bible, except for maybe Lamentations, because it's in the word, lament. It's one of the saddest books in all the Bible because it's a guy who wasted his life. The world didn't say he wasted his life. The world said he was a king. The world said, oh, he fortified Megiddo. He fortified these towns with these amazing, you know, six-horse stalls. It was unbelievable, and his architecture was great. And he made alliances with kingdoms. He had the biggest kingdom in all the world. And he writes a book, and he says, I wasted my life. And here's what he says about money. Ecclesiastes 5:10. He says, he who loves money will not be satisfied with money. Okay? If you're sitting here this morning thinking, well, John, I get the whole, like, don't want to be super rich, but all I want is to, like, I don't know, one day make $100,000 a year. That's all I want. And once I get that, I will be fine. No complaints. You know what you'll want when you make $100,000 a year? You'll want 200. What happens if you say, I just want to be a millionaire, okay? Once I got my million, guess what? That's fine, right? You know what you're going to want? You want more, because that million goes really fast. It's really easy to spend money. It goes really fast. He who loves money will never be satisfied with money. So what I want to do for you right now is I want you to change your heart, change your mind, and say, that's not what I'm going to pursue with my life. I'm not just going to go for the job that makes me the most money. I'm going to do the thing that pleases God the most. Look at what he says. He says, nor he who loves wealth with his income. You're not going to be satisfied. This is also vanity. Vanity means empty. He said at the beginning of the book of Ecclesiastes, vanity is like that mist thing that James was talking about. It's a mist. It's here for a little bit, then boom, it's gone. Look at verse 11. He says, when goods increase, they increase who eat them, right? You got more stuff, guess what? More people are going to come after you. More people are going to start wanting your stuff. More people are going to start stealing your stuff, right? Take a nice car into a bad neighborhood. Guess what? That car's the target, right? You think, no, it's great that you have a nice car. Well, it'd be better if you want to be safe in some of those neighborhoods to have a not nice car, because you're not going to be the target. When goods increase, those who eat them also increase. He says, and what advantage has their owner but to see them with his eyes? I mean, what's the benefit of having a bunch of stuff if everybody's constantly attacking you to get your stuff and all you spend your life doing is guarding your assets, right? He says, that's hardly a good life. He says, sweet is sleep in verse 12. Sweet is the sleep of a laborer when he eats little or much, but the full stomach of the rich will not let him sleep. He says, okay, think about a laborer and a rich person, right? It's funny that he even uses those words. What words does James use? Rich and laborer, right? Because there's kind of two main classes back in the day. You had the rich people who owned the land and the laborers who worked the land. That was basically your two classes. Not a huge middle class there. But he says, the laborer, the guy who works in the fields, guess what? His sleep is actually better. Because whether he gets a lot or gets a little, guess what? He's content with his life, and he's not always guarding his assets and always fighting for his life. And then look at the rich person. Well, he's got a full stomach, but he's not happy. He goes to sleep, and he's got insomnia because he's just so worried. He's so nervous about, what about this land? What about this piece of land? What about this property? What about this king? He kind of wants to attack this other house that I've got going on, and he's always worried. Because the laborer, he's just got a simpler life. Verse 13, he says, there's a grievous evil that I've seen under the sun. Riches were kept by their owner to his hurt. People kept stuff. He says, this is a weird thing that I've seen. Solomon's an old man. He's seen the world. He's experienced everything. And he says, this is a weird thing that I've noticed. That sometimes people keep stuff and it ends up hurting them. They hang on to assets and houses and lands, and it ends up hurting them in the end. The more stuff you have, the more things you can be hurt by. It's amazing. It just seems so backwards to us and maybe to you because you're saying, well, let me just try it and then we'll test this whole theory out. Trust me, I don't think you want to. Verse 14, he says, and those riches were lost in a bad venture, right? You throw all your money into a stock or whatever, a company, and guess what? Boom, it crashes and the CEO quits and then all that money's gone. Look what else. He says, and he is a father of a son, but he has nothing in his hand. As he came from his mother's womb, he shall go again, naked as he came, and shall take nothing for his toil that he may carry away in his hand. It's like, look, he's lived his whole life. He's got all this stuff, but guess what? He couldn't take anything with him. Let that just sink in and change your mind about wealth. If that's what you're going to spend your life seeking, let me just tell you right now, from generally the beginning of your life, it will not make you happy because you can't take it with you. Another passage, we don't have time to turn there, but you can write it down. Psalm 73, a guy named Asaph looked at the world. He looked at stuff that people had, and he said, I wanted it, man. I saw the cars. I saw the Lamborghinis, right? And he didn't actually say that. But he saw the wicked, and they were rich. There's a funny line in there. It's like they're sleek and plump. It's like they're fat, but they're skinny. They eat, but they're still skinny, right? It's like weird. Like, how do they look so good? Right? You might be like, what? I don't want to. But it's just it's a weird thing that he says. He says, they have everything. Their bellies are full. And you know what they say? God doesn't even know. I earned this stuff. This is my stuff. God didn't give it to me. And he says, in the end, Asaph says, when I looked at them, I kind of wanted what they had, but then I realized that I was being like dumb. That wasn't right. He says, because God has set them in slippery places. God will take away their wealth, whether in life or in death. He says, but as for me, it's good to be near God. If you can just learn that this morning, that it is better to be near God than to have stuff, then this text has certainly spoken something very important to you. Because the truth is, the riches that people have, whether you're wicked or whether you're righteous, they will be gone one day. That's what James says. Back in James 5:2, he says, your riches have rotted. Your garments are moth-eaten. Your gold and silver have corroded, and their corrosion will be evidence against you, okay? In James, he says four things. He talks about riches, garments, gold, and silver, okay? I want to show you something that's kind of funny about this, okay? He says riches, okay? Riches. That word, at least in the Greek, usually can refer to like food portions. So imagine this. Your food that you've got, guess what? It's rotten. That's kind of the idea. He says, you got a lot of food, guess what? It's going to rot one day. And then he says, your garments, they're moth-eaten. You're like, what? Rich people have got nice clothes. Well, but one day they're going to be moth-eaten. Also, your gold and your silver have corroded. Guess what? Gold and silver doesn't corrode. Think about what he's saying. Their garments are not moth-eaten at the time. Their gold and their silver, they have not corroded. They are still very valuable, right? Their riches surely haven't rotten. But what is he trying to say? He's trying to say, look, if you rely on that, guess what? They will fail you in the end. Because one day, guess what? They will rot. One day, your gold and your silver will not be worth anything. Every millionaire, just about every millionaire, when they come to the point of their death, say, I'd trade it all for more time. I'd trade it all for family that I never had because I was so worried about my stuff and my riches. Point number two, we want to get our minds right about money. I want you to rely on God and not your money. Rely on God and not your money. It reminds me of the days of the Bible bucks. Remember the Bible bucks? Mm-hmm. Remember that? Yeah. Does anyone still have Bible bucks? Yes, a couple of people still have Bible bucks, right? Can I tell you something? Bible bucks are worthless. No offense, no offense, but they're worthless. Well, they weren't though, right? They weren't when you were in fifth grade and you were saving up. Guys, I have to tell you, when I was in the kids ministry here at Compass Bible Church, it was a different time, man. Bible bucks, it's more simple. The inflation rate of Bible bucks, can I tell you something? Wow, it is extremely high. We only had ones. When I was in like sixth grade, they invented the five. And that was like, whoa, that's crazy. A five? Like we had ones. This one guy, I was so mad at him when I was a kid. I was so mad at him because he had more than me. And you know, I thought I was pretty good, the whole Bible buck thing. I thought, you know, I come to church every week. I always remember my Bible, right? Mr. Rush always gave me Bible bucks. Like I was there, right? He was there when you were there. And I said, me too. Yeah. And James Shimabukuru, this dude had more than me, okay? He didn't just have more than me. He brought a pencil case. You remember the pencil cases? Like the full, not like a little sliver, but like the one that he had like four stacks of money just filled to the brim. And it was like coming out. He couldn't even close it anymore. It was like a dude with a brief, it's like a briefcase. Like here's $1 million, right? That's how James was with his Bible bucks. And I thought, man, he's got more than me, right? And we're friends, so it's not like I hate him, but I did a little bit. It made me mad. But guess what? Those Bible bucks are worth nothing. And if he was to right now say, hey, John, guess what? Check out these Bible bucks. You impressed? I'd be like, James. No, I'm not impressed. That's lame. I can't believe you just pulled out the Bible bucks. That's lame. And if he said, no, I've been paying my college tuition with the Bible bucks. You'd be like, what kind of school are you going to, bro? It's like, no, okay, that was a lie. I wasn't paying college tuition, but I'm going to pay rent with it. My landlord's going to be like, oh, Bible bucks? Absolutely. Thank you. Right? No. Why? Because they're worthless to us now. They're worth a lot to a third grader in the kids' men room, but they're worthless to me now. You know, that's how you're going to view money one day. That's how you're going to view money one day and your stuff. You're going to look back from heaven's perspective and be like, I can't believe we worried so much about money. Can't believe we worried so much about our Bible bucks, right? And some people are going to lose friendships over those Bible bucks. I mean, think about it. I don't know. I haven't been in the kidsman world, but I'm guessing there's some relationship strife with some people over their Bible bucks, okay? I bet, you know, little Jenny and little Sally are having some fight, and a little Kyle and a little Jake are, I don't know, that's just random, like, stock names. Just like Jake and Kyle. If your name's Jake or Kyle, my apologies, but that's just funny to me. Can't you just picture it, right, with like spiky hair, right? And with like a button-up shirt that looks like your director's. Like a shirt that his mom picked out. Like Jake and Kyle right now are probably fighting over Bible bucks, right? And you would probably tell them, hey, Jake and Kyle, don't ruin your relationship. Jake, don't ruin your relationship with Kyle. Jenny, do not ruin your relationship with Sally over Bible bucks because it's not worth it. Because one day it's not going to matter anymore. And you shouldn't definitely rely on it. Because guess what? The second you step out of our church, guess what? They're also worthless. They can't take it to Target and say, hey, can I get whatever you get at Target? Everything. The world. Buy me the world at Target. Right? They can't take it to Target and say, yeah, here you go. Can you give me some change? They'd laugh at you, right? That's why it's dumb to rely on your money. Because one day that's exactly how your money's going to be. It's powerful right now because guess what? It makes people feel safe, right? Having a lot of money, it's like, okay, I want a lot of money because it'll make me feel safe. It'll make me feel secure. But what does Ecclesiastes say? Dude, the more you have, the more insecure you're going to be. But if you right now can focus and think, okay, my money is God's money. God gave it. God can take it away. God's certainly going to provide it if I'm faithful to him. Guess what? Money is not that big of a deal. And I know that sounds weird, but it's not. There are things that are more important than money, but the Bible says the way you deal with money shows your heart, and your heart is the most important thing about you. This morning, If you went to main service, we studied Psalm 20, verse 7. And you started singing your kidsmen songs. Here's what Psalm 20 says. It says, some trust in chariots and some in horses, but we trust in the name of the Lord. Yeah, that's what I thought. You should have heard my dad preaching. He just started dancing. No, I'm just kidding. It's not in his brain. It's in my brain, though, right? But you know what the kidsmen song didn't include? Verse 8. They will collapse and fall. I don't think that's in verse 2, okay? I don't think that's in the bridge, okay? They will collapse and they will fall, but we will rise and stand upright, right? Collapse. They will faint. They will fall down and hit their head in a rock, right? They will fall down. They will have a broken leg. They will not be able to stand, but we'll be able to stand, right? Guys, things not in the kidsmen song, but it's okay. It's okay that it's not in the kidsmen song. That first line is probably more important, right? Some trust in chariots, some in horses, but we trust in the name of the Lord our God. The whole context of Psalm 20 is David going out to battle, right? Some trust in chariots, some in horses. Some trust in their stuff, but we don't trust in that. If you rely on God, God will take care of everything you need. Proverbs 11:28 says, whoever trusts in his riches will fall. Same idea, same word, will fall. But the righteous will flourish like a green leaf. If you trust in God, you're going to flourish. You're going to be fine. James says that the riches that people have in their so-called bank accounts is what we'd call them. And James 5:3, there'll be evidence against them in the last day. It's like a courtroom. I mean, James is painting us a picture. He's saying, imagine you're in a courtroom and someone is being convicted of a crime and someone says, boom, here's some evidence. Okay? It says, your stuff, condemning these rich people who were mean and got their money the wrong way, your stuff is exhibit A. It's evidence that your heart was not right with God. I certainly don't want that to be true of anybody in this room, that your heart's not right with God, and the first piece of evidence that God will show you is your money, because that's like showing you Bible bucks. You're going to say, wow, that was really worthless. It mattered so much to me then, but it doesn't matter anything anymore. The people who were rich in this passage in James 5 who were mean, they weren't just bad because they had stuff. They were also bad in how they got that stuff, okay? And that's the last thing I want you to look at in verse 4 and verse 6. It says, the wages of the laborers who mowed your fields, which you've kept back by fraud. Look at this. These guys have gotten this money, and the way that they got it was bad. They got it by stealing. They got it by fraud. They said, hey, guess what? I'm going to pay you tomorrow, and they didn't pay them. Oh, well, next week, I'll pay you next week. And they didn't pay him next week. And then they got more stuff and they said, ha ha, guess what? They can't do anything about it because they're poor and I'm rich and you can't do anything about it. All right? That's what these people did. And verse 6 says, you've condemned and murdered the righteous person. All right, think about it. People come and say, hey, you weren't fair. You said you give us your stuff. And then they can slander and they can do something bad. Why? To keep their money. Also, when the law talks about this in the book of Leviticus and in the book of Deuteronomy, when the people of Israel are going into the promised land, God gave some rules. And one of the rules he said was, hey, if there's people who are working in your fields, let's say you're a rich person in Israel. If there's people working in your fields, you know what you need to do? You need to pay them. And don't just pay them. If they're poor and they depend on it, pay them every single day, right? Usually how work happens now at companies, you don't get paid every day, right? You usually get paid every 2 weeks or so. But he says, hey, there's people who needed every single day. If you worked on a field in Israel, if the landowner did what he was supposed to, he'd pay you every day. There was also this thing where it said, hey, if there's this loan going on and someone uses their cloak as collateral, which is something you put down to prove that you're gonna pay it back, he says, you know what you should do when it gets cold? Give that collateral back and then take it back during the daytime when they don't need it. That's how generous and that's how nice and that's the business ethic that the people of Israel were supposed to have. Certainly we're supposed to have it as well. Point number 3, write this down. I know this might seem like it's far off, but you need to earn money honestly. Earn money honestly. This will affect the rest of your life, how you deal with money. Earn money honestly. If you're a boss, don't oppress the people who work for you. Be fair to them. Be kind to them. When they ask you, hey, can I go do this? Say, yeah, of course. Help them. Be kind to them. Be a good boss. Some of you are going to be bosses one day. You need to be the best boss you can be. Most of you are going to be employees one day. You need to be a good employee, not cutting corners, not trying to cheat your boss out of money as well. That's also what happens. Sometimes people who work for companies, steal money from companies. Right? And it's not the boss who does it, it's the employee. Right? That's going to be a temptation for you. And the temptation to earn money dishonestly is going to get easier and easier for you the older you get. Right now you'd think, well, I don't know how to earn money dishonestly. Maybe go like stealing, I guess. But I don't want to get caught. Right? One day it'll become a little bit easier for you when you're older. You can cut corners. If you're tempted to do that, remember what God said in Isaiah 10. Isaiah 10 verse 1 says, woe to those who decree iniquitous decrees. The people who are in charge, woe to them. Curses be on them from God when they make laws and decrees that are inequitous, that are unjust. And the writers who keep writing oppression, the lawmakers who write down oppressive laws, it says to turn aside from the needy, from justice, and to rob the poor of my people of their right, that widows may be their spoil, and that they might take the fatherless as their prey. He says, look, there's people in Israel when Isaiah was writing who took advantage of two groups of people, the widows and the fatherless, orphans, widows. Guess what James 1:27 says? True religion is to help the orphans and widows, right? To help the people in our churches, in our lives that need help. That's what it really means to serve God, but these people didn't clearly. Isaiah 10:3 says, what will you do on the day of punishment? In the ruin that will come to you from afar, to whom will you flee for help? God says, because guess what? You can't come to me. You oppress my people, guess what? When judgment's coming, don't turn to me. Don't ask me for help because I will not help you. I mean, think about how serious that is. God's saying to these people, you've oppressed people, guess what? Don't turn to me for help because I'm not going to help you. He says, nothing remains but to crouch among the prisoners or to fall among the slain, right? When the judgment was going to come on these people, he says, you rich people who thought you were great, who sold people for, the price of a sandal. That's what Amos says. Just like you sold them for that much and you've hurt people. Guess what? Where are you going to flee? You're going to be like a prisoner of war. You're going to be like a captive. Or what are you going to do? Crouch down when the armies come in and lay down with the dead people and play possum and act dead? That's all that you can do to try to escape from the judgment that's coming from you. He says, you can't turn to me. You ever feel like cutting corners and cheating people out of money? Just realize that God takes that so seriously. Proverbs 10 verse 2 says, treasure gained by wickedness does not profit, but righteousness delivers from death. Then verse 3 says, and the Lord does not let the righteous go hungry, but he thwarts the cravings of the wicked. Okay, if you're a righteous person and you do what God wants you to do, guess what this is promising you? You're not going to go hungry. You're going to be taken care of. You might not get everything you want. You might not have the latest technology. You might not have the best clothes. You might not have the best situation or best housing, but guess what? God will provide for you if you're this righteous person. But what does it say about the wicked? If you're a person who wants to use God's name in vain, if you're a person who wants to go after God, if you're a person who wants to do wrong things, guess what? If you're opposing God, don't expect him to help you and take care of you. Don't expect him to do that because you'll fall into this category of the wicked. Proverbs 10:9, that was verse 3. Verse 9 of that text says, whoever walks in integrity walks securely. You want to walk secure? You want to be secure? You want to not worry about finances? Guess what? Just walk in integrity. Just do the right thing. But he who makes his way crooked will be found out. See, that's the thing. Usually people steal and, earn money dishonestly by thinking, well, guess what? Nobody's going to find this out, right? Nobody's going to catch me. Nobody will know if I take that extra thing. Nobody will know if I steal that money from the jar. Nobody will know if I just cheat a little bit on the taxes. Nobody will know about that. But God says, no, your wickedness in stealing money and in robbing it from people and wanting to take it from others, that will be found out. God will reveal it to the world. Later on in Proverbs 11:3, Proverbs is full of advice and wisdom and commands about money. This one says, Proverbs 11:3, the integrity of the upright guides them, but the crookedness of the treacherous destroys them. Right? What ends up destroying these unrighteous people? Their unfairness and the way that they dealt with money incorrectly. That will destroy them. God will use that, turn it on its head, and end up destroying them. People go to prison, right, for stealing money that they thought nobody would catch, nobody would find out. And God takes it and turns it on their head. He judges it. He says, riches do not profit in the day of wrath, but righteousness delivers from death. You can just be righteous, deliver you from death. Proverbs 16, verse 8 says, better is a little with righteousness than great revenues with injustice. Some of you might think, wow, well, I don't have as much as the next person. I'm not as rich as the person next to me. I'm not as rich as them. I don't have as much stuff. I don't have as nice of a house. Well, what about me? He says, better is a little with righteousness than great revenues with injustice. That doesn't mean if you're poor, you are a righteous person. Doesn't mean that. Doesn't mean if you're rich, you're an unrighteous person. But it does mean that if you deal with integrity, you're falling into that category of righteous. So what should we do? What should we do with our stuff? Earn money honestly also. Okay, here's what the Proverbs say we should do with our money. Proverbs 14:21 says, whoever despises his neighbor is a sinner, but blessed is he who is generous to the poor. Proverbs 14:31, that was 14:21, this is 14:31. Listen, it says, whoever oppresses a poor man insults his maker. You want to oppress a poor person? You want to take from them what they need? Guess what? You're insulting God. I don't want to insult God. It says, but he who's generous to the needy honors him. You honor God when you're generous to people who need it. Okay? This is the kicker. This is even more impressive. Proverbs 19:17. This is the last one. It says, whoever is generous to the poor lends to the Lord. If you want to lend to somebody, I think you want to lend to the Lord. Because guess what? Psalm 50 says, he owns the cattle on 1,000 hills. He owns every car in the car dealership. Think about that. You're lending to him. When you're generous to people in your lives, guess what? You're giving to God, and God owns everything. God can distribute the wealth that he possesses in any way he wants. Don't you think you want to lend to God? I mean, think about it. Literally, think about a car dealership. I know that sounds stupid, right? But a car dealership. God owns a cattle on 1,000 hills. He owns every car in the lot, okay? One day you're going to have a car, and you're going to be tempted to not want to use it for the right things. You're going to be tempted to sin with it. You're going to be tempted to say, I don't want to give that person a ride. I don't want to help my little sibling. I don't want to do that. Whoever lends to the poor lends to the Lord. God owns everything. It's dumb for us not to be generous to the people in our lives. We need to take every opportunity to use our money for something that matters. In Matthew 6, Jesus said that no servant can serve two masters. You're going to love the one or hate the other. But right before that, he says, don't lay up for yourselves treasures on earth. He says, don't make your life all about being comfortable. Because he says, moth and rust, right? They're going to destroy it. Technology, guess what? That iPhone is going to be old and outdated, and you're going to get it wet, and it's going to break, and it's going to get a cracked screen, and it's not going to matter anymore. But he says, lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven. Use the stuff you have now to be generous and to be rewarded by God. It just makes sense. Greed is not something that only rich people struggle with. It's something that we can struggle with. Maybe you struggle with it. Maybe you want more than you have and you're not content. Let me just tell you, you need to be content with what you have and give what you have to God, because you cannot outgive God. Try it. Try to give more than you think you can. Guess what God's going to do? God's going to take care of you. You will be shocked. You'll be amazed if you only trust that he'll take care of you. I know you think, John, I don't earn money. I don't have a job. Well, you will. And I want you to earn money honestly. And I want you to do all these things, not just now, but also in the future. Not just to forget about these things and forget about, oh yeah, money, I guess it's not that important. And, you know, relying on God, well, whatever. I want you to remember this for the rest of your life. This is the kind of sermon that you want to maybe look back on in a couple years when you start to get a job. You want to look back on these truths in James 5 and say, wow, God certainly has something to say in here for me. Let's pray.